The seething sphere of wizard's fire vividly illuminated the ground beneath it as it shot past. Even though not directed at her, the sound alone was enough to make Kaelin ache to cringe away in dread. She knew enough about wizard's fire, how it clung tenaciously to the skin to be more than wary of it. Once that living fire touched you, it couldn't be dislodged. Even a single droplet of wizard's fire would often eat through flesh down to the bone. There was no one either brave or foolish enough not to fear it. Few people touched by such conjured flame lived to recount the horror of the experience. For those who did, revenge became a lifelong obsession. Then, in the light of that bright flame streaking across the valley floor, Kaelin caught sight of the horde, all with swords, maces, flails, axes, pikes, and lances raised in the air as they yelled their battle cries. The men, grim, daunting, fierce, were all in the grip of a wild lust for the fight as they ran headlong out of the night. In the moonlight, Kaelin could see, for the first time since she had joined up with the army, the full extent of the enemy forces. The reports had told the story, but could not fully convey the reality of the sight. The numbers were so far removed from her experience as to defy comprehension. Eyes wide, jaw hanging open, she gasped in awe. Kaelin realized with alarm that the enemy was much closer than she had expected. Throughout the ocean of men, torches meant to be used to set fires sparkled like moonlight off the vast sea flooding into the valley. At the horizon, that moonlight gleaming off uncountable weapons blurred into a flat line over which she almost expected to see ships sailing. The undulating leading edge, bristling shields and spears threatened to close off her path. Kaelin used her right heel back against her horse's flank to guide him a little to the right so as to clear the wave of soldiers. After she had corrected his course, she thumped her heels against the animal's ribs, urging him on. And then she realized, as arrows zipped past and spears plunged to the ground just in front of her, that in the light of the wizard's fire, the enemy could see her too. The ball of wizard's fire that had revealed her to the enemy wailed off into the darkness, leaving her in shadow and lighting tens of thousands of men at a time as it passed over their heads. Far in the distance, behind the advancing horde, the fire finally crashed to the ground, igniting a conflagration in the midst of the cavalry. Horsemen were often held back, ready to charge forth when their men encountered the Dharan lines. The distant mortal screams of man and beast rose into the night. An arrow skipped off her leather leg armor. More zipped past. One stuck in the saddle just below her stomach as she leaned forward over the galloping horse's withers. Apparently, in the moonlight, they could still spot her and Verno racing past. "Why aren't they blind?" Kaelin called over her shoulder. She could see a cloud billowing out behind them. It looked little different than the dust the horse raised as it galloped, except Kaelin saw that it was coming from the bucket Verna rested against her thigh as she tipped it toward the enemy lines, a little more, a little less, controlling the amount that poured out, keeping it in a steady stream. Kara had already been passed, yet the men showed no ill effect. "It takes a little while to work," Verna said in Kaelin's ear. "They have to blink a bit." Fire raced past right behind them. Fiery droplets splashed down onto the snow, splattering when they hit, hissing like rain on hot stones around a fire. The horse snorted as he raced onward in near panic. As she leaned over his withers, Kaelin stroked his neck reassuringly, reminding him that he wasn't alone. Kaelin let her gaze sweep along the advancing enemy line as she raced before them. She saw that the men were doing little blinking. Their eyes were wide in their fervor for the coming battle. The wizard's fire that had so spooked the horse from behind exploded through the enemy ranks. Liquid flames spilled across the mass of soldiers, touching off a shrill roar of ghastly cries. When burning men crashed into soldiers around them, fire splashed onto them too, spreading the horror. Around the fire, the advancing line buckled. Yet other men, running headlong through the night, trampled those on the ground only to lose their own footing and topple. Another sphere of wizard's fire droned past to crash down, spilling its flame like water from a burst dam. So massive was the eruption that the surge swept men away, carrying them off in a flaming current. A huge knot of fire erupted out of the enemy line, not far in front of Kaelin, headed toward the Dharan lines. Immediately a small sphere of blue flame roared in from her right, meeting the ponderous globe of yellow flame in midair. The collision sent a shower of fire raining down around her as she rode past. Kaelin gasped and yanked the reins left as a fat gob of the plummeting fire crashed to the ground right before them, splattering flame everywhere. They missed the fire by inches. But she now found herself closing with the enemy soldiers at an alarming rate. Kaelin could read some of the obscene oaths on their lips. She spurred the terrified horse to the right. He turned a little, but not enough to divert them from angling in toward the enemy lines. Glowing bits of fire rained down on the men as well as the open ground. The horse was running in a panic, too frightened to take direction from Kaelin. The stench of burning leather was adding fuel to the horse's fear. She glanced down and saw a bit of fire burning on the leather armor protecting her thigh. The small but fierce flame fluttered wildly in the wind. She dared not try to brush the glowing spot off, lest it then stick to her hand. She feared to imagine what it would feel like when it finally burned through the leather. She would have to endure the pain when it did. She had no choice. Verna didn't realize what was happening. She was twisted sideways, still releasing the glass dust. Kaelin could see the plume of it carried away behind them. The long trail curved, carried by the breeze, into the enemy, past the front lines, back through the ranks of soldiers, off into the blackness. Farther back in the order's ranks, the torches lit the cloud as it mingled with the dust churned up from the frozen ground. An arrow nicked the horse's shoulder and skipped up into the air. A surge of men, seeing her coming, ran with wild abandon in an effort to block her way. Kaelin yanked on the reins, trying to haul the powerful horse's head to the right. In the grip of terror, the horse galloped on. She felt helpless as she tried to get it to turn. It was doing no good. They were headed right toward a wall of men. "We're getting too close," Verna yelled in her ear. Kaelin was too busy to answer. Her arm was shaking with the effort of pulling on the right rein, trying to turn the horse's head over and to the right, but the horse had the bit in his teeth and was stronger than her by far. Sweat trickled down her neck. She stretched her right leg back and dug her heel into the horse's right flank to turn him. The men before them brought their pikes and swords around to bear. Fighting was one thing, but not having any control and just watching her fate come at her was different. "Kaelin, what are you doing?" With the pressure of her heel in front of his right rear leg, she was finally forcing the horse to turn. It wasn't enough. She wasn't going to be able to divert the runaway horse. The enemy looked like a steel porcupine rushing at them. Three strides away, the horse lowered his head. "Good boy," she cried. Maybe he had a chance to clear the pikes. Kaelin took her weight off the saddle and angled forward, flattening her back. She bent her arms, giving the reins slack with her hands to either side of the horse's neck. She kept pressure on him with her lower legs, but let him have the freedom he needed. She didn't know if it would work with the extra weight. If only the pikes were shorter! Kaelin screamed for Verna to hold on. Wizard's fire suddenly streamed past in front of them, coming in low. The men who had rushed ahead in a line to block Kaelin's way dove to the ground. The entire line before them collapsed. The fire wailed past just over top of them, finally touching down off to Kaelin's left. The cries of a thousand men filled her ears. The horse stretched his lowered head, getting his hocks underneath his body. At the last instant, his neck shortened and his head came up as he sprang upward, using his powerful hindquarters to launch himself. His back rounded as they sailed over the leading edge of men. Verna cried out, her arm like a hook around Kaelin's middle. They came down beyond the soldiers who had dropped flat. With her weight on the stirrups, Kaelin used her legs to absorb the shock. Verna couldn't. With the extra load, the horse nearly stumbled as it landed, but kept his balance and continued running. They were at last clear of the order soldiers. "What's the matter with you?" Verna yelled. "Don't do that, or I won't be able to let it out evenly." "Sorry," Kaelin called over her shoulder. Despite the cold wind in her face, sweat ran from her scalp. The order soldiers seemed to fall away to their rear quarter. Giddy relief washed over as she realized they had made it past the bulge in the Imperial Order's front lines. In the distance behind them, a storm of fire lit the night. Zed and Warren were showing them a good old-fashioned firefight, as Zed had put it. It was a terrifying demonstration, if insufficient to stop an enemy as large as the Order. As the Order's gifted raced to the scene and threw up shields, it limited the death and devastation. The two wizards had bought Kaelin and Verna the time they had needed. Kaelin heard Kara calling, "Whoa!" as she galloped up close. This time, with Kara's horse heading them off, the lathered mount rapidly came to a halt. The horse was exhausted, as was Kaelin. As they dismounted beside Kara and Sister Philippa, Verna tossed the empty bucket to the ground. Kaelin was glad it was dark, so that the others couldn't see her legs trembling. She was relieved to see that the spot of fire had expended itself before burning through. The four of them watched as the knight went mad with flame, most exploding against shields of magic, yet still doing damage to anyone too close. Zed and Warren sent forth one tumbling sphere of fiery death after another. The cries of men could be heard all along the line. The fire was being returned, reaping death in the Dharan lines, but the sisters were throwing up their own shields. Still the vast enemy army advanced. At most, the deadly flames only slowed them and disrupted their orderly attack. As the gifted on both sides gained control, they managed to nullify each other's fiery attacks. Kaelin knew that the forward Dharan lines had no hope of holding the onrushing flood of the Order. They had no hope of even slowing them. In the moonlight, she could see them beginning to abandon their positions. "Why isn't it working?" Kaelin whispered half to herself. She leaned toward Verna. "Are you sure it was made properly?" Watching the enemy's headlong rush, and in the din of battle cries, Verna didn't seem to hear the question. Kaelin checked her sword. She realized how futile it would be to try to fight. She felt Richard's sword on her back and considered drawing it, but decided it would be better to run. She pushed Verna, urging her to their spent horse. Kara did the same with Sister Philippa. Before she stepped into the stirrup, Kaelin noticed the Order slowing. She saw men stumbling. Some groped with outstretched arms. Others fell. Verna pointed. "Look." An endless moan of frightened agony began rising up into the night, growing in intensity. Staggering men fell over one another. Some swung their swords at an invisible enemy, hacking instead their blinded fellow soldiers. The progress of the men at the front slowed to a crawl. Soldiers kept coming, colliding with the stalled front line. Cavalry horses panicked, bucking off riders. Spooked horses ran off in every direction, oblivious to the men they trampled. Racing wagons overturned. Confusion swept the enemy's ranks. The advance buckled. The Imperial Order ground to a halt. Zed and Warren rode up and dismounted, both sweating despite the frigid night air. Kaelin gave Zed's bony hand a squeeze. "You two saved our necks at the end there." Zed gestured to Warren.
"Him, not me."
Warren shrugged. "I saw your predicament." They all stared in wonder, watching the army gone blind.
"You did it, Verna," Kaelin said. "You and your glass saved us."
At last she and Verna threw their arms around each other. Tears of relief coursed down their cheeks. Chapter 40 Kaelin was one of the last to cross over the pass. The valley beyond was well protected by towering rock walls around the southern half. It was a long and difficult route around those mountains, if the Order had any thoughts of attacking them here. While the troops of the Dharan Empire had no intention of letting themselves get trapped in that valley, for the time being it was a safe place. Big old spruces filled the lap of the surrounding mountains, so they were somewhat protected from the wind as well. Tents carpeted the forest floor. It was good to see all the campfires and smell the wood smoke, a sign that they were safe enough for the men to have fires. The aroma of cooking filled the late night air, too. It had been a lot of work moving the army and their equipment over the pass, and the men were hungry. General Myford looked as pleased as any general would when the army he feared lost was at last safe, at least for the time being. He guided Kaelin and Kara through the darkness dotted by thousands of campfires to tents he had set up for them. Along the way he filled them in on how everything with the army had gone, and ran through a list of what few things they had had to leave behind. "It's going to be a cold night," General Myford said when they had reached the tents he had set aside for them between two towering spruce.
"I had a sack of pebbles heated by a fire for you, Mother Confessor. You too, Mr. Skara."
Kalin thanked him before he left to see to his duties. Kara went off to go get something to eat. Kalin told her to go ahead, that she just wanted to sleep. Inside her tent, Kalin found Spirit standing on a little table, the lamp hanging from the ridgepole lighting her proud pose. She paused to trace a finger down the flowing robes. Kalin, her teeth chattering, could hardly wait to crawl into bed and pull that sack of heated pebbles under the fur mantle with her. She thought about how cold she was, and then instead of climbing into her bed, went back outside and searched through the dark camp until she found a sister. After following the sister's directions, going between tents until she reached the area with the thick young trees, Kalin found the small lean-to shelter set among the boughs for protection from the wind and weather. She squatted down, peering inside at the bundle of blankets she could just make out in the light coming from nearby campfires.
"Holly, are you in there?"
A little head poked out.
"Mother Confessor?"
The girl was shivering.
"What is it? Do you need me?"
"Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. Come with me, please." Holly climbed out, swaddled in a blanket. Kalin took her little hand and walked her back to her tent in silence. Holly's eyes grew big and round as Kalin ushered her inside. Before the small table, the girl paused to stand still as a stump, while she stared in wonder at Spirit.
"Like it?" Kalin asked.
Trembling with the cold, Holly reverently ran her frail fingers down Spirit's arm.
"Wherever did you get something so beautiful?"
"Richard carved it for me." Holly finally pulled her gaze from the statue and looked up at Kalin.
"I miss Richard."
Kalin could see Holly's breath in the motionless air of the tent.
"He was always nice to me. A lot of people were mean, but Richard was always nice."
Kalin felt an unexpected stab of anguish. She hadn't expected the subject to turn to Richard.
"What was it you needed, Mother Confessor?"
Kalin turned her thoughts away from her sorrow and smiled.
"I was proud of the work you did to help save us today. I promised you that you would be warm. Tonight, you will be."
The girl's teeth were chattering.
"Really?"
Kalin laid the Sword of Truth on the far side of the bed. She stripped off some of her heavier clothing, doused the lamp, then sat down on the straw-filled pallet. Light from nearby campfires lent a soft glow to the tent's walls.
"Come, climb into bed with me. It's going to be very cold tonight. I need you to keep me warm."
Holly only had to consider for a second. As Kalin laid down on her side, she pulled Holly's back against her stomach, and then drew the sack of heated pebbles up against the girl's front. Holly hugged the sack and moaned with the thrill of warmth. The satisfied moan made Kalin smile. For a long time, she smiled, enjoying the simple pleasure of seeing Holly warm and safe. Having the girl there, holding her close, helped Kalin to forget all the terrible things she had seen that day. Far up in the mountains, a single wolf sang out in a long, lonely call. The cry echoed through the valley, trailing off to be renewed again and again with forlorn persistence. With his sword at her back, Kalin's thoughts turned to Richard. Thinking about him, wondering where he was and if he was safe, she silently wept herself to sleep. The next day, snow moved down from the higher mountains to rampage across the southern regions of the Midlands. The storms raged for 2 days. The second night of the blizzard, Kalin shared her tent with Holly, Valerie, and Helen. They sat under blankets, ate camp stew, sang songs, told stories of princes and princesses, and slept together to keep warm. When the snowstorm finally ended in a bleak golden sunrise, most of the taller tents had snow drifted to their eaves on their downwind side. The smaller ones were completely covered over. The men dug themselves out, looking like so many woodchucks come up out of their burrows for a peek. Over the next several weeks, the storms continued to roll past, dumping more snow. In such weather, fighting or even moving an army very far was difficult. Scouts reported that the Imperial Order had withdrawn a week's march back to the south. It would be a burden to care for blinded men. Within a day's walk all around the place where the special glass had been released, The Daharan scouts reported that they had seen well over 60,000 frozen corpses, now drifted over with the snow. Blind men unable to care for themselves in the harsh conditions. The Imperial Order had probably abandoned them to their fate. A few dozen of the blind had managed to make it over the pass, looking for help, begging for mercy. Kalin had ordered them executed. It was hard telling the exact number blinded by Verna's special glass. It could be that there were many who did in fact retreat with the Imperial Order, brought along to perform menial tasks. It was likely, though, that the corpses reported by the scouts were the bulk of those blinded. Kalin could imagine that Jigang might not want them in his camp, using food and supplies, reminding his men of their stinging retreat. She knew, though, that for Jigang, retreat was but a momentary setback and not a reappraisal of his objectives. The Order had men enough to shrug off the loss of the 100,000 killed since the fighting had started. For the time being, the weather prevented Jigang from striking back. Kalin didn't intend to sit and wait for him. A month later, when the representative from Hirschborg arrived, she met with him immediately in the small trapper's lodge they had found up in the trees to the west side of the valley. The lodge sat under the protection of towering ancient pines, away from the open areas where the tents were congregated. The lodge had become Kalin's frequent quarters, and often also served as their command center. It greatly relieved General Myford when Kalin would stay in the lodge rather than a tent. It made him feel as if the army was doing something about providing better accommodations for the Mother Confessor, the wife of Lord Rahl. Kalin and Kara did appreciate the nights they slept in the lodge, but Kalin didn't want anyone to think she wasn't up to the conditions the rest of them had to endure. Sometimes she would instead have the girl sleep in the lodge along with some of the sisters, and sometimes she insisted Verna sleep there with Holly, Valerie, and Helen. It didn't take a great deal of effort to persuade the prelate. Kalin greeted Representative Theriault from the land of Hirschborg, inviting him into the cozy lodge. He was accompanied by a small guard unit who waited outside. Hirschborg was a small country. Their contribution to the war effort was in the area of their only product, wool. Kalin had need of the man. After Representative Theriault knelt before the Mother Confessor, receiving the traditional greetings, he at last stood and pushed his heavy hood back on his shoulders. He broke into a broad grin. "Mother Confessor, so good to see you well." She returned a sincere smile. "And you, Representative Theriault, here, come over by the fire and warm yourself." By the stone fireplace, he pulled off his gloves and held his hands before the crackling flames. He glanced to the gleaming hilt of the sword sticking up behind her shoulder. His eye was caught by Spirit standing proudly on the mantel. He stared in wonder, as did everyone who saw the proud figure. "We heard about Lord Rahl being captured," he finally said. "Has there been any word?" Kalin shook her head. "We know they haven't harmed him, but that's about all. I know my husband. He's resourceful. I expect he will find a way to get back to help us." The man nodded, his brow furrowed as he listened earnestly. Kara, standing beside the table, reminded of her Lord Rahl by Kalin's words, idly rolled her ajeel in her fingers. Kalin could tell by the look in Kara's blue eyes, and by the way she casually let the weapon dangle once more by the small gold chain around her wrist, that the ajeel being linked to the living Lord Rahl still possessed its power. As long as it worked, they knew Richard was alive. That was all they knew. The man opened his heavy traveling cloak. "How goes the war? Everyone anxiously awaits word." "As near as we can figure, we've managed to kill over 100,000 of their troops." The man gasped. Such numbers were staggering to someone from a place as small as his homeland of Hirschborg. "Then they must be defeated. Have they run back to the old world?" Rather than meet his gaze, Kalin stared at the logs checkering in the wavering glow of the flames. "I'm afraid that losing that many men is hardly crippling to the Imperial Order. We're taking their numbers down, but they have an army of well over 10 times that many. They remain a threat, a week's march to the south of here." Kalin looked up to see him staring at her. She could tell by the look in his eyes that he was having difficulty trying to imagine that many people. His wind-reddened face had paled considerably.
"Dear spirits," he whispered, "we've heard rumors, but to learn they are true."
With a despondent look, he shook his head.
"How is it ever going to be possible to defeat a foe of that size?"
"Seems that I remember, a number of years back, you were in Adendrill to see the council, and you had a bit of trouble after grand dinner. That big man from Kelton, I forget his name, was boasting and speaking ill of your small land. He called you some name. Do you remember that night, what he called you?"
Representative Theriault's eyes sparkled as he smiled.
"Puny?" "Puny, that was it. I guess he felt that because he was twice your size, that made him your better. I recall men clearing off a table, and the two of you arm-wrestling."
"Ah, well, I was younger back then, and I had a few glasses of wine with dinner besides."
"You won."
He laughed softly.
"Not by strength. He was cocky. I was clever, perhaps. And quick, that's all."
"You won. That was the result. Those 100,000 order troops aren't any less dead because they outnumbered us."
The smile left his lips.
"Point taken. I guess the Imperial Order ought to quit now while they have men left. I recall how those 5,000 Galleon recruits you led went after that force of 50,000 and eliminated them."
He leaned an arm on the rough-hewn mantel.
"Anyway, I see your point. When you are facing superior strength, you must use your wits."
"I need your help," Kaelin told the man. His big brown eyes reflected the firelight as they turned toward her.
"Anything, Mother Confessor, if it be in my power to do anything."
Kaelin bent and shoved another log onto the fire. Sparks swirled around before ascending the chimney.
"We need wool cloaks, hooded cloaks, for the men."
He considered only briefly.
"Just tell me the numbers, and I will see to it. I'm sure it can be arranged."
"I'll need at least 100,000, our entire force down here at present. We're expecting more men any time, so if you could add half again that number, it would go a long way to helping destroy the Order." As he went back through mental calculations, Kaelin used the poker to set the new log to the back of the fire.
"I know I'm not asking for something easy."
He scratched his scalp through his thick gray hair.
"You've no need of hearing how difficult it will be. That won't help you win. So let me just say that you will have them."
Representative Theriault's word was a pledge as sound as gold and as valuable. She stood and faced him.
"And I want them made from bleached wool."
He lifted an eyebrow in curiosity.
"Bleached wool?
We need to be clever, as you can understand. The Imperial Order comes from far to the south. Richard was down there once and told me about how the weather is very different than it is up here in the New World. Their winters are nothing like we have. If I don't miss my bet, the Order is not familiar with winter, nor is it used to surviving, much less fighting in such weather. Winter conditions may be difficult, but this puts it to our advantage."
Kaelin made a fist before him. "I want to harry them mercilessly. I want to use the winter weather to make them suffer. I want to draw them out, make them have to fight in conditions they don't understand as well as we do. I want the hooded cloaks to help disguise our men. I want to be able to use the conditions to get in close on raids and then disappear right before their eyes."
"They don't have gifted?"
"Yes. But they're not going to have a sorceress telling every archer where to aim his arrow."
He stroked his chin.
"Yes, I see your point."
He slapped the mantle as if to seal his promise.
"I'll have our people begin at once. Your men will need warm mittens, too."
Kaelin smiled appreciatively.
"They will be grateful. Have your people start sending the cloaks down to us as soon as they have some made. Don't wait for them all. We can start our raids with any number and add to them as you deliver more."
Representative Theriault pulled his hood up and fastened his heavy wool cloak.
"Winter has just set in. The more time you have to whittle them down while you have the advantage of weather, the better. I had best be on my way at once."
Kalin clasped arms with the man. Not something the mother confessor typically did, but something anyone else might do in sincere appreciation of aid. As she and Kara stood outside the door, watching the representative and his guards trudging off through the snow, Kalin hoped the supply of white cloaks would start arriving soon, and that they would be as effective as she hoped.
"Do you really think we can press the war effectively in winter?" Kara asked.
Kalin turned back to the door.
"We have to."
Before she went back inside, Kalin caught sight of a procession coming up through the trees. When they were a little closer, she saw that it was General Myford on foot, leading. She was able to pick out Addie, Verna, Warren, and Zed, all walking along beside four riders. The midday sun sparkled off the hilt of the lead rider's sword. Kalin gasped when she saw who it was. Without bothering to go back inside to get her cloak or fur mantle, she raced down through the snow to greet him. Kara was right on Kalin's heels.
"Harold!" she called out as she got closer. "Oh, Harold, are we ever glad to see you!"
It was her half-brother, come from Galia. Kalin then saw some of the other men riding behind him, and gasped again in surprise. Captain Bradley Ryan, commander of the Galian recruits she had fought with, was there, and his lieutenant Flynn Hobson. She thought she recognized Sergeant Frost in the rear. Her face hurt from grinning as she ran up to them through the deep snow. Kalin wanted to pull her half-brother off his horse and hug him. In a Galian field officer uniform, far more muted than their dress uniform, he looked grand on his well-bred mount. She only now fully realized how worried she had been over his late arrival. Carrying himself like the prince he was, Harold tipped his head to her as he bowed in his saddle. He offered only a small, private smile.
"Mother Confessor, I am gratified to find you well."
Captain Ryan was grinning, even if Prince Harold wasn't. Kalin had fond memories of Bradley and Flynn, of their bravery, courage, and heart. The fighting had been horrifying, but the company of those fine soldiers, fine young men all, was a cherished memory. They had done the impossible before, and had come to help do it again. Standing beside his horse, Kalin reached up for Harold's hand.
"Come inside. We've a good fire going."
She motioned to the captain, the lieutenant, and the sergeant.
"You too. Come inside and get warm."
Kalin turned to the others, who didn't look nearly as happy as Kalin thought they should.
"We'll all fit. Come inside."
Prince Harold stepped down out of the stirrup.
"Mother Confessor, I—"
Kalin couldn't resist. She threw her arms around her half-brother. He was a big bear of a man, much like their father, King Wyborn.
"Harold, I'm so relieved to see you. How's Cirilla?"
Cirilla, Harold's sister and Kalin's half-sister, was a dozen years older than Kalin. Cirilla had been ill for ages, it seemed. When she had been captured by the Order, she had been thrown into the pit with a gang of murderers and rapists. Harold had rescued her, but the abuse she suffered had left her in an incoherent state, oblivious of those around her. She regained her senses only infrequently. When she came awake, she more often than not screamed and cried uncontrollably. One of the times when she was lucid, she had asked Kalin to promise to be the Queen of Galia to keep her people safe. Harold, wishing to remain commander of the Galian army, refused the crown. Kalin reluctantly had acceded to his wish. Harold's eyes shifted to the others briefly.
"Mother Confessor, we need to have a talk."
Chapter 41. At Prince Harold's instructions, Captain Ryan and his two men went to see to their troops and horses, while the rest of them crowded into the small trapper's lodge. Zed and Warren sat on a bench made of a board laid atop two log rounds. Verna and Addie sat against the opposite wall on another bench. Kara gazed out the small window. Standing near Kara, General Myford watched as the prince ran a finger back and forth along the front edge of the table. Kalin folded her hands on the table before her.
"So," she began, fearing the worst,
"how is Cirilla?"
Harold smoothed the front of his coat.
"The queen has recovered."
"Queen?" Kalin rose out of her chair.
Cirilla has recovered? Harold, that's wonderful news.
And she has at last taken her crown back?
Even better.
Galen was delighted to be relieved of the role of queen to Galia. As mother confessor, it was an awkward duty better served by Cirilla. More than that, though, she was relieved to learn that her half-sister had finally recovered, while the two of them were never close. They shared a mutual respect. More than her cheer at Cirilla's recovery, though, Caelan felt a sense of deliverance that Harold had at last brought his troops down to join with them. She hoped he'd been able to raise the 100,000 they had previously discussed. It would be a good beginning for the army Caelan needed to raise. Harold licked his weather-cracked lips. By the slump in his shoulders, she was sure that the task of collecting his army had been trying, and the journey arduous. She had never seen his face looking so worn. He had a vague, empty look that reminded her of her father. Caelan smiled exuberantly, determined to show her appreciation. "How many troops did you bring? We could certainly use the whole 100,000. That would just about double what we have down here so far. The spirits know we need them." No one was saying anything. As she looked from one person to the next, no one would meet her gaze. Caelan's sense of relief was sloughing away. "Harold, how many troops did you bring?" He ran his meaty fingers back through his long, thick, dark hair. "About 1,000. She stared dumbly, sinking back into her chair.
1,000?
He nodded, still not meeting her eyes. "Captain Bradley and his men, the ones you led and fought beside before." Caelan could feel her face heating.
"We need all your troops, Harold. What's going on?"
He at last met her gaze.
"Queen Cirilla refused my plan to take our troops south. Shortly after you were there and visited her, she came out of her illness. She was herself again, full of ambition and fire. You know what she was like. She was always tireless in her advocacy for Galia."
His fingers idly tapped the table.
"But I am afraid she has been changed by her infirmity. She fears the Imperial Order."
"So do I," Caelan said with quiet, bottled rage. She could feel Richard's sword pressed against the back of her shoulder. She saw Harold's eyes take it in.
"Everyone in the Midlands fears the Order. That's why we need those troops."
He was nodding as she spoke.
"I told her all that. I did. She said that she is Queen of Galia, and as such, she must put our land first. Galia has joined the Daharan Empire."
He opened his hands in a helpless gesture.
"When she was ill, she was unaware of that event taking place. She said she only gave you the crown for the safekeeping of her people, not to surrender their sovereignty."
His hands dropped to his sides.
"She claims you never had any such authority, and refuses to abide by the agreement."
Caelan glanced at the others in the room, sitting mute, like a panel of grim judges.
"Harold, you and I have discussed all this in the past. The Midlands is under threat." She swept her arm out. "The entire new world is threatened. We must turn back that threat, not take to defending one land at a time, or have each land try to fend for themselves. If we do that, we will all fall one at a time. We must stand together."
"I agree with you in principle, Mother Confessor. Queen Cirilla does not."
"Then Cirilla is not recovered, Harold. She is still sick."
"That may be, but it is not for me to say."
Elbow on the table, Caelan rested her forehead against her fingertips. Thoughts were screaming around inside her head, demanding that this not be happening.
"What about Jibra?"
Zed asked from the side of the room. Caelan was relieved to hear his voice, as if reason were returning to the lunacy of what she was hearing, as if the weight of another voice would set things straight.
"We left the seer there to help care for Cirilla, and to advise you. Surely Jibra must have advised Cirilla against such actions."
Harold hung his head again. "I'm afraid that Queen Cirilla ordered Jibra thrown into a dungeon. Moreover, the queen gave orders that if Jebra speaks one word of her blasphemy, as Queen Cyrilla calls it, she is to have her tongue cut out. Caelan had to tell herself to blink. It was no longer Cyrilla's behavior that so stunned her. Her words came sparse and brittle, the naked bones of dead respect. "Harold, why would you follow the orders of a madwoman?" His jaw took a set, as if injured by her tone. "Mother Confessor, she is not only my sister, but my queen. I am sworn to obey my queen in order to protect the Galilean people. All those men of ours out there who have been fighting with your army are also sworn to protect the people of Galilea above all else. I've already given them our queen's orders. We must all return to Galilea at once. I'm sorry, but that is the way it must be." Caelan pounded her fist to the table and shot to her feet. "Galilea stands at the head of the Calasidran Valley. It's a gateway right up the center of the Midlands. Don't you see what a tempting route it might be for the Imperial Order? Don't you see how they might want to split the Midlands?" "Of course I do, Mother Confessor." She aimed a stiff arm, pointing at the camp beyond the lodge. "So you just expect all those men out there to put their lives between you and the Order. You and Queen Cyrilla callously expect all those men out there to die protecting you, while you sit back in Galilea, hoping they prevent the Order from ever reaching you? Of course not, Mother Confessor." "What's the matter with you? Don't you see that if you fight with us to halt the Order, you are protecting the people of your homeland?" Harold licked his lip. "Mother Confessor, all you say is probably true. It is also irrelevant. I am commander of the Galilean army. My entire life has been devoted to serving the people of Galilea and my sovereign, first my mother and father, then my sister. From the time I was a boy, at my father's knee, I was taught to protect Galilea above all else." Caelan did her best to control her voice. "Harold, Cyrilla is obviously still sick. If you are honestly interested in protecting your people, you must see that what you're doing is not the way to accomplish it." "Mother Confessor, I have been charged by my queen with protecting the people of Galilea. I know my duty."
"Duty?"
Caelan wiped a hand across her face. "Harold, you can't blindly follow that woman's whim. The route to life and liberty exists only through reason. She may be queen, but reason can be your only true sovereign. To fail to use reason in this, to fail to think, is intellectual anarchy." He looked at her as if she were some poor child who didn't understand the world of adult responsibility. "She is my queen. The queen is devoted to the people." Caelan drummed her fingers on the table. "What Cyrilla is deluded by ghosts that still haunt her. She is going to bring harm to your people. You are going to aid her in delivering your people into ruin because you wish something to be true, even though it is not. You are seeing her as she once was, not as she is now." He shrugged. "Mother Confessor, I can understand why you think what you think, but it can change nothing. I must do as my queen commands." Elbows on the table, Caelan held her face in her hands for a time, trembling with anger at the insanity of what she was hearing. She finally looked up, meeting her half-brother's gaze.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 12.